How are things in Chile?
Things are chill in Chile. It's nice. It's nice.
This is The Lonely Voice with Peter Orner from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. Peter Orner is in Chile for the Cátedra Abierta en Homenaje a Roberto Bolaño con Peter Orner. It's a lecture honoring Roberto Bolaño, sponsored by the Universidad Diego Portales. So, though we didn't want to impose on Peter while he was away, it also seemed a good time to pay tribute to Roberto Bolaño in one more way here on The Lonely Voice with Peter Orner. Bolaño was born in Chile, and though he lived in Mexico with his family for a time and then in Spain, he's generally considered a Chilean writer. Maybe we've all seen the images of Bolaño. There's something ineffable in his attractiveness, something very hard to name. We admire the long curly hair, the large glasses, the ubiquitous cigarette. Perhaps he wears a leather jacket, maybe a t-shirt and blazer. There's something ineffable in his writing, too, that makes it difficult to describe or define. We just know it's great. Often people tell me they avoid Bolaño, thinking just by his own outward appearance that his work must be too challenging and inaccessible. Those who are not deterred by the superficial find soon enough that he's someone who appreciated clarity, a story you can tell without a lot of pyrotechnics. His stories have characters we feel we knew once, or characters that resonate even when they're quite enigmatic or even troubling. Bolaño published novels and stories. Many still consider him to be primarily a poet. He was also a reader, and reading about his reading life is almost as enjoyable as reading something by him. In the story Clara, we see something of the economy of poetry, but this is a story, a great one. It involves a man dragging the past behind him over 3 decades worth of a sort of an itinerant relationship with a woman named Clara. When they were young, she was beautiful to the man, and for whatever else elemented that attraction, he seems unable to disconnect from her completely over long years, even when she's making her own life away from him. He's the narrator. He tells his version of things. And whether he's truthful or not, kind in the telling or not, what we have here is a love story that a lot of us might recognize, with characters that are likely familiar. The passage of time, a kind of regret, and loneliness. I mean, what is not to love? Here now, Peter Orner and I discuss Clara by Roberto Bolaño. Must be really fun to read Bolaño in Chile, maybe.
It's funny. They invited me is, and the series is like a homage to Bolaño, but like they just invite people at once a year to do this, and it's got nothing to do with Bolaño, but I thought it did. So they keep making fun of me that they're going to give me a test. I think people are sick of talking about Bolaño, actually.
Oh, do you think so? Yeah, this is the thing about him, don't you think? Like people, I feel like people really love the idea of him and, you know, the glasses and the cigarette and the curly hair, and they do love his work. Or I've read a lot of things lately, because I knew we were going to do this, about he's great, but he's not my favorite. You know, this is a very interesting thing about Bolaño. I think people are either like super addicted to him, or they just think he's really good and he's fine, and or they've never read him.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he took a lot of air out of, you know, he didn't live here. I mean, he was from here, but he didn't live in Chile. He lived in Spain, and so I think there's always been a little bit of an issue with that. I like overprepared, so I read a lot, and so I'm like really into Bolaño now. You know, it's like when people don't like, it's like the Dennis Johnson problem. It's like when people like somebody, what snobs like us might think is for the wrong reason, you know. I mean, Bolaño is up there with anybody. He can, you know, I mean, there's that Jonathan Lethem quote where he shows us literature can do anything. I don't think that's total bullshit. I think he really could, especially coming here before. I've been reading, I'm almost done with it, but the novel By Night in Chile, which is not the Bolaño that I had read in other places. It's a pretty incredible, even I think even maybe better than the big books that we know, you know. I mean, I know By Night in Chile is not unfamous, but it's not an active, sorry, I'm still in that mode of like, you know, talking at a college, you know, or I'm like, blah, blah. Yakety yak. But he does, it is an act of kind of ventriloquism, which is pretty extraordinary, that novel. So anyway, alas.
Glada, this is a story that I think a lot of people know about and love. And then I've also read lately, because maybe I've also overprepared like you, that, oh, it's not as best, but people like to talk about it. People like to describe it as being a very straightforward story. I disagree with that idea, but it is easy to read. And this is another thing about Bolaño, that his writing is very clear and it's easy to read, but deceptively so, I think. I think there's just a lot going on.
For sure, for sure. I mean, whether or not this is best story or not, I mean, there's things in this story that are pretty remarkable, and yeah, he's not like going out of his way to let you know that that's what's going on here, but I don't know, I hadn't read it, so it was new to me, and I thought it was awesome.
I've always liked this story, and as I told you, I think about it when I think about certain other stories, like the Sarah Cole by Russell Banks. But it is obviously its own story, a very different kind of story, where the narrator, the first person narrator, gets to tell the story about a relationship with this woman. And I know you don't like to talk about crafty things too much, but I have to talk about the unreliability of the narrator.
No. Okay. Okay.
Let me get it out of my system, or maybe we should build up to it. I don't know. Well, I'll reserve it for now because it may just derail our whole conversation.
No, I mean, I think it, I mean, I'd love to hear that.
Well, so this is the guy who starts a story by describing this woman. She had big breasts, slim legs, and blue eyes. That's how I like to remember her. That's how I like to remember her. Just that sentence is sort of like a cue to us that her appearance changed, obviously, but this is his telling of it, and this is the way he's remembering her, and this is the way he's going to describe her. I don't know why I fell madly in love with her, but I did. And at the start, I mean, for the first few days, the first hours, it all went fine. The first few days, the first hours. That's also very interesting. And then the dream, right? So my whole point about the unreliability of the narrator is he gets to tell the story and he's very clear with this idea that he fell madly in love. And because we go from age 18 to 40 something,
Something, yeah.
he's still talking about her. He's still talking about how she looks and he's still talking about how she used to look. And his kind of nostalgia for those earlier days. But when he paints that picture of the earlier days, he is not kind to her. He's kind to her about her appearance, it seems like, for the most part. But he's not very kind to her in other aspects, in terms of her intelligence and the way she writes and some of these other things, her poor choices and her lack of ambition. And this is the thing with Bolaño, right? With his women, with the women in some of his stories. They're sort of like this, but they are objects of desire at a certain point in his life. And it seems like the story he's telling in this case is not so much about how he's still madly in love with Clara. He's madly in love with Clara at 18, or the idea that he had of her in his youth. It's about hearkening back to the past as much as it is about anything else. Do you think so?
Yeah, I mean, find me the reliable narrator, not just in fiction, but in the universe. Find me a guy that's not a jerk either. I mean, I think, but the story, for me, and maybe it's who you are, positioned who you are when you read this, right? But like for me, it's about what you said at the end, which is about just the passage of time and how knowing somebody when you're 18 and then knowing them when they're dying at 40, what that's like, jerk or no jerk. And I mean, the inability to see in this story, and you mentioned Sarah Cole. I mean, to me, I think this is a far superior story. I think I think I just don't get Sarah Cole like you do. I think I just don't get it. This one seems to me like so deceptive at the end, and you're watching somebody, kind of not even understand, not have even the ability to even understand that what they're doing is grieving, and maybe they're not grieving the right person. Maybe this guy doesn't see her. all those things, and yet life sneaks up on him. I feel like the last two pages are so incredibly tense. I found myself, because again, I was reading this for the first time, reading faster just to find out what happens. I never do that. If there's one thing I try and do is I always try and read slowly and patiently. But this story, like this, I and the great stories defy that desire, And I was like, oh, damn, what's gonna happen? Even though there's no real suspense, but he somehow manages it at the end. So, but I totally agree that he doesn't see her, and he sees her as an object, no question about it. But yet she almost fights her way, and becomes, in spite of him, in spite of his inability to see a character in her own right, a sorrowful character, but somebody who may be us, I think.
Yes, and I wonder at what point did it become really tense? Because that's very interesting to me, because it does have those moments even from the start. But yeah, at the end, I think it's where it picks up, because you're realizing there's a certain point where you're thinking, my God, he's still keeping track of her, and they're still connecting either on the phone or in person, but mostly on the phone. And he finds her again. They find each other again. And, she is in another sort of place in her life. She gets married twice. I mean, she's searching for something too that she hasn't found. And she makes all kinds of bad decisions in this process. And she's depressed, and she has nightmares. And, she goes through these terrible things that we hear about from his perspective, but there must be some germ of something there about her and what she has shared with him. Life has not gone that well for her, and he's sort of in this place of, but I don't know, I'm just, I don't really care about her anymore. And yet he knows what's going on in her life.
Yeah, like we do about old friends that are, at one point there's a great line where I mean, I think we should back up maybe and kind of maybe read a little,
Okay.
but I mean, I think he's got you. I think he's got you. I think you're almost like the ideal reader for this story in the sense that I think he's like, I think if you start taking a story like personally, or you know what I mean? Like, it's like, 'cause he's offensive. He's really nasty about her. Totally. Don't you think?
Yes, I have been him. I think
We all have
we've all been,
judgmental, like,
yeah.
oh, she's a bad photographer, she's a bad painter, she sucks. And and there are, I Bolaño is the great celebrant of artists who aren't talented enough to be good artists. And
Correct.
I think he dearly, in other situations, he's more loving towards those people. But in here, in this particular story, with this particular narrator, he's especially harsh. And we're left to trust his judgment that she was not a good painter. But it's see clearly she didn't follow through on anything. But how many people we know like this? How many people are we? I mean, I identify, I guess, more with her. Like she's searching around, she's trying, and nobody gives her a break.
There is a certain point in the story, and maybe I don't know if you agree with me or not, where she comes off kind of flat, because he can be obsessed with her without really knowing her.
Absolutely.
And
Like people do. Like
like
people
people
don't
do.
know people,
Yes, he only knows certain things about her, and those are the things that we know he loved. He's sort of still. I don't know. I don't want to say in love, but he's sort of still in that space of the 18-year-old. This is what he's hearkening back for. This is what he's yearning for. In the same way that she's searching, it seemed like she's searching for something, some meaning in her life, or some love, or whatever. He is also searching for something, but he's in control of the story. And so I feel like he gets to say whatever he's going to say. This is where, for me, the unreliability comes in. He gets to say she sucked at whatever, at XYZ, at all these things. And who knows if she did. And, the idea of her losing her looks or whatever as she got older, but he's still keeping track of her, because what he is trying to recapture, and he will never be able to do it, is that earlier feeling. And he wants to assign that feeling to her when they're older. And people do this too. They're stubborn about it. You can't move them away from this idea that somebody has moved on, been married twice. All of this just doesn't seem like he was able to reckon with that.
I think you're right. He's not able to reckon with it. And that's what the story's about. It's an inability to reckon with your own past love, which maybe wasn't even much of anything at all. He even says he was a minor character in her life. And she's basically a minor character in his, except that he's a person, a narrator who is carrying someone around with him. And then this, you know, there's this reconnection later in life, and it has some weight. I think it's like, it's a piece of fiction. He literally has us by the throat in sort of believing it, believing this completely. And maybe that is the great, you know, skill of somebody like Bolaño, where it's not the art, the craft is so kind of beside the point. All I want to know is what happens to Clara, and I want her to survive, you know.
Yes.
And it doesn't seem like she's going to. But just to go back to early on in the story when he first meets her, you know, they have some meeting. It's not really detailed. That's the thing. It's like, this story is not even a celebration of lost love, because he doesn't even talk about the moment where they were in love, or he was even in love with her. It's just, it cuts right to shitty stuff happening. And that's another thing I love about the story.
But why?
What's that?
But why? Why does that happen? I think it's because it was unrequited. So he has to gloss over that. But
sure,
he glosses over it right into this story about his obsession with her, really. I think.
But again, it's like even the obsession, like, it isn't even, he doesn't even know why. It's just kind of like, it seems like an intense microscopic look at a minor event because of what happens later.
Yes.
There's a reconnection later. And those of us who reconnect with people after many years and then have that kind of, I don't know, maybe it's a story for 55-year-olds. You know what I mean? Like, it's like everything is sort of like we've realized that that we're heading for that the end is much closer than the beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I'm all over the place on this, but I there's this moment at the beginning where he goes to see her after they had some initial encounter in Barcelona that went quite well, and then he goes to visit her in her town in southern Spain. He goes to the house, and I arrived at Clara's apartment at 9:30 after having a coffee at the station and smoking a few cigarettes to kill some time, so he doesn't want to seem too eager, but it's he took the first train in the morning. The fat woman with messy hair opened the door, and when I said I had come to see Clara, she looked at me as if I were a lamb on its way to slaughter. For a few minutes, and this is incredible, I wish my Spanish was strong enough to read this in the original to see how he does this, but for a few minutes, in parentheses, they seemed extraordinarily long at the time. And thinking the whole thing over later on, I realized that in fact they were. I sat and waited for Clara in the living room, a living room that seemed welcoming for no special reason, overly cluttered, but welcoming and full of light. So all these like contradictions that kind of like, you know, it's welcoming, but it's not, it's taking forever. And then when Clara makes her entrance, it was like the apparition of a goddess. I know it was a stupid thing to think, and it's a stupid thing to say, but that's how it was. And then they have a bad time. And then they never have a good time ever again in the entire history of their relationship together. And yet there's something, you know, we stay connected to people, either through other friends or whatever. And so over the years, he and Clara, you know, are in track of each other. And so then they reunite again. Years later, Clara told me about the parts of her life I had missed out on. And then years after that, both she and I and some friends of hers told me her life story all over again, starting from the beginning or from the point where we split up. Since I was a minor character, it didn't make any difference to them or me, really, although it wasn't so easy to admit. And then, you know, he just kind of is now at this point somebody who is outside of her life completely, but on occasion he gets updates. And that's where we are. And that's where the story starts. It starts when it's long over. We're only at the top of page two, basically. And so what am I saying? It's about keeping track of people who aren't that close to you. And do they mean something to us? Because they meant something to us once for a tiny glimmer in time? And I think the answer to the story is yes, they do.
I'm glad you pointed to that section because where you read, I said I had come to see Clara. She looked at me as if I were a lamb on its way to slaughter. Why? Why did she look at him that way? And then the other thing, the following days were pleasant and unpleasant. We saw a lot of films, almost one a day. We made love. I was the first guy that Clara had slept with, which seemed incidental or anecdotal, but in the end, it would cost me dearly. What does that mean? They do have a terrible time. He doesn't linger anywhere in the narrative too much for too long, but he kind of does in that section that you read, and I wonder about that. And of course, he doesn't explain the clutter. He doesn't describe the clutter. He doesn't describe very much at all. So it's still a very kind of general description. This is Bolaño in the story for sure, and in others like it. But because we don't need to know much more. But the point is,
You think it's what do you mean? You think that it's Bolaño, like it's autobiographical?
no, like I see this in Bolaño. But who knows if it's autobiographical? I don't know. But I see this in Bolaño. This idea about the way he tells a story is like the way we tell stories.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I love about it. Like he doesn't, it's not this abstruse thing. It's just like, just tell me the story.
Right,
This is
right.
what I love. Yes.
And so I met this woman when I was younger, and she was even younger than I was. We had this thing. It didn't go very well. It ended. That's it. And then they circle each other. Maybe, they live in a, you know, they live they're in the same orbit of each other because of the age and because of some friends, common friends they have. And so they keep track of each other. And over the years, they re-encounter, and her, we have no idea how the narrator's life goes, but there's some suggestion it's going okay, right? And hers is not going okay. And over the years, it gets progressively worse. I think, let's resist the word, tragic figure. We should, but I'm using it because that's what Clara is. She's somebody whose life's expectations never quite led to anything. And then the narrator, instead of being sentimental or even sugarcoating that, is at least honest about his own nastiness, about her mediocrity. Like he thinks that she's a mediocre person and he says it. And it's hard to read because you're like, what an asshole. But, I feel like there's a certain degree of honesty from the point of view of the narrator. There's not pretending that this was any great relationship or that they had any significant connection, but they had a connection. I mean, it's so right what you said that he just doesn't see her and he objectifies her completely. And yet, I don't know, I get the feeling that she gets the better of him in the end because of that. Am I crazy to think that?
No, you're not. And I see it too. Like, look at that paragraph where it says, years later, Clara told me about the parts of her life I had missed out on. And then years after that, both she and some of her friends told me the life story all over again, starting from the beginning or from the point where we split up. Since I was a minor character, it didn't make any difference to them or to me, really, although that wasn't so easy to admit. Predictably, not long after the end of our engagement, I know engagement is hyperbolic, but it's the best word I
It's
can
not even
find.
true. It's not hyperbolic is not the question. And I trust the translator,
Yes,
Chris Anderson.
yes.
I know that he's getting this right. And
Yes.
so, there's something just bizarre about the fact that he says it's an engagement, whatever.
Yes.
Anyway. Go
And then
ahead.
Clara got married, and the lucky man was, logically enough, one of the friends I had met on my first trip to her city. But before that, she had psychological problems. She used to dream about rats. And then the next bit is, so Clara got married. And the husband, Clara's dear husband, surprised everyone, even her, after 1 or 2 years. I'm not sure exactly. Interesting. Clara told me, but I've forgotten. They split up. And it wasn't an amicable separation. He broke her jaw, apparently. And, once he says this terrible thing about this physical abuse, he says, what I do find funny, because he's picturing her driving herself, hand on the wheel, and the other supporting her jawbone. I'd like to find it funny, but I can't. What I do find funny is her wedding night. So he takes this really horrible thing that supposedly happened to her with the husband, and he decides to imagine her wedding night and something really horrible, and who knows what is true or not here. She'd had an operation for hemorrhoids the day before. Is that really true, or is he just saying that because he can't bring himself to really think in honest terms about her wedding night, even though she's married to a horrible monster who hit her? But it goes back to his own obsession with her and painting certain situations in an extremely negative way. She was dumb. She was mediocre. She, her wedding night was probably terrible because of this. So even like the things that are just about her, he still returns to describing them in a very negative way. And I do want to say something before I forget. I love that she got second place in the beauty pageant, because I think that means that she's probably really beautiful. Probably.
There's no better writer about second place finishes than Bolaño. I mean, all his characters, every literary contest they enter, they always get in second place. They never win. And so I like that he translates that over to beauty contests. But sure, yeah. But again, I mean, the negativity, it's just like, to me, it's just like, yes, there's no question this guy's an asshole. Like, you know what I mean? There's no question that he's unable. But I guess what I appreciate is that Bolaños doesn't create a character in this case where he's going to, pretend that they have a decency,
Yeah.
Or any decency that they're aware of anyway.
When they keep in touch, they keep in touch, and apparently they do reconnect. And again, it's sort of like they reconnect, I feel like, on her terms. And then she says, soon after that, I left her, but this time I decided to call her every so often and stay in touch with one of her friends who could fill me in, if only now and then. That's how I came to know a few things it might have been easier not to know. Stories that did nothing for my peace of mind. The kind of news an egotist should always take care to avoid. That's a very interesting line in the story. Because what he learns about her is, again, it's terrible. And, she's not having a great life. Then he says, on one occasion, for reasons irrelevant to this story. Oh, really? For reasons irrelevant to this story, I had to spend a night in Clara's city. Mm-hmm. I called her from my hotel, told her where I was, and arranged to meet her the following day. I would have preferred to see her that night, but after our previous encounter, Clara regarded me, and perhaps with good reason, as a kind of enemy, so I didn't insist. She was almost unrecognizable. She had put on weight, and in spite of the makeup, her face looked worn, not so much by time as by frustration, which surprised me, since I'd never really thought that Clara aspired to anything. He gets to control the story.
As any narrator does, as any writer does, okay. Right? Maybe it's like reaches almost a grotesque level here in the way that he once again describes her in that way, and then says this horrible thing, as if anyone, regardless of their talent or not talent, isn't frustrated by the things that happen in their life, as if you could somehow go through life without because you didn't have expectations, therefore you can't be frustrated. Of course she had expectations. She was confused about what they were, as most of us are. And so I think the very nature of sort of treating her this way almost helps her emerge for me again as a far more human being than the narrator themselves. And that's the alchemy here, I think, is that by treating her this way and describing her this way, the narrator actually, again, makes her emerge for me as a far more substantial character. That's just a weird thing. By diminishing her and by insisting, I think, that she is so just nobody. I just start to kind of pull that, I don't know what, that mask off and realize, and I'm seeing her sitting there like, look, my second marriage is also not going great, and now I'm sick. And maybe I'm being too generous to the to the, I don't
No.
mean to be. I'm not trying to be generous to the narrator. I'm trying to
No.
suggest that by being so obviously almost ridiculously misogynistic and nasty. And again, I'm new to this story, but it feels like almost like the narrator himself is negated. And that it and that's I mean, the title does suggest this is Clara. It's a back-assed, backward way of trying to put somebody on the page, But somehow there she is, to me, anyway.
Yeah. When he is told that she has cancer, he says, "All the years since I had met Clara suddenly came tumbling down on top of me. Everything my life had been, most of it nothing to do with her." I don't know what else the woman said at the other end of the line, hundreds of miles away. I think I began to cry in spite of myself, like in the poem by Rubén Darío. I fumbled in my pockets for cigarettes, listened to fragments of stories, doctors, operations, mastectomies, discussions, different points of view, deliberations. The activities of a Clara I couldn't know or touch or help, not now. A Clara who could never save me now. And then.
First of all, the absurdity of a Claire who could never save me now, just maybe we just leave it. Just like, it's such a startling and very deliberate indictment of this, a self-indictment of the narrator. That's how I see it. Like, if only, what is it about Clara that could possibly save him? And yet somehow I'm buying it. I'm buying that. There is, in spite of what the narrator is able to kind of articulate or even say to himself in his darkest hour, there's something about Clara. I don't know. I mean, I the line is startling and just worth thinking about. And it's after that's when I started to rush. I almost was like reading in a panic this morning. To get to the end and to find out, if she makes it. And we shouldn't ruin the ending too much, but I think it's one of the again, so deceptive and so, it's not even the writing isn't beautiful or anything. It's just kind of workaday, I mean, Bolaño can turn it on and he can write beautifully. But here it's just like a workaday sentence, and I'm getting this done. And it's almost like he was rushing too, because he couldn't even take it. So I agree with you. I mean, I think this story, it becomes, and a weirdly, I don't even know how, but it transcends itself in late in the story, I got to reread it again about 19 more times. But what was it that was making me like feel a certain amount of panic on the last page here? I'd like to try and figure out why. I get, why did you pick it?
I love the story. I mean, I just really like it. So you said Bolaño, and I said Clara.
Yeah. I can see why, but I guess I'm just curious about why it's the one, you know.
I think it was, oh man, we don't have enough time. But we don't have enough time for me to explain. I just really love the story, and I think you're right. I think it's a story for people of a certain age who go through these kinds of reveries, you know, who feel a kind of a nostalgia for the past that's very slanted and skewed, and you forget, you know, you can sort of boil away all the horribleness, or you bring the horribleness in, because I think the narrator does that too, and is not coming to terms with it, but just can't help but remember it, because it was also such a part of the beautiful times.
Yeah. I mean, I want to, can I disagree with myself? I know you got to go.
Yes, you can disagree with yourself.
But there's this beautiful Russell Banks line, which I think we've talked about, where he talks about no place for me, no place for you, my love, the Eudora Welty story. And he says, you have to be a certain age to get it. And I always resented that, even though it's a nice line, but I think I sort of said the same thing, you know, as if you have to, you know, as if fiction requires a certain life experience to, you know, to feel it. And so, I both agree with that and don't agree with it. You know what I mean? Because I think, of course, there's going to be readers who may not have come anywhere near, you know, a certain age who will be like, damn, that one knocked me over. You know what I mean? So
Yeah.
I think Russell Banks is right, and also I think he's wrong, if that makes sense. And I think I'm the same is true for what I said earlier. It's a great story that is like so it shouldn't be, and it
Yeah.
just yeah, and the ending is startling, and yeah, we'll leave it at that.
Roberto Bolaño is the author of Clara. This has been The Lonely Voice with Peter Orner. Jacob Rosati composed our theme music. Dan Katz is Texas Public Radio's news director. I'm Yvette Benavides.